Hi there, I'm Tucky and welcome to the Geek Show. And we are on the Keyframe section of the Geek Show. And today we have Rob.
Hello.
We have Mark.
Hello.
And we have Lewis.
Hello.
Lovely high energy entrance into the show there.
Yes.
Let's go for it. You guys know that we're out there. What have we got up first then?
Well, first up, we've got a pile of news because the blurb has moved to the end of the show, so I'll do the blurb later. But we've got a pile of news, starting off with Invader Zim, who is making a surprise comeback to Nickelodeon in an all-new original TV movie.
Yay!
Why a movie?
I don't know.
Why a movie?
I honestly don't know.
It's Nickelodeon. If I remember right, Nickelodeon also did a Hey Arnold movie. Straight to TV movie, just to appease fans who hounded them nonstop. I think it's pretty much the same thing with Invader Zim, isn't it?
Yeah. I suppose it is. I mean, Invader Zim isn't the property that I expected them to choose to make another movie of, but it is a cartoon series that I absolutely adore, for good reason.
Yeah, Invader Zim was one of those series where it's like, it was kind of when I lost Sky and before I got, like, the internet was good enough to start downloading stuff. So it's like, it's what I completely missed, and I still don't think it's even been put on any streaming source yet. But I've always heard good things, and I know what the creator gets up to.
Really?
Oh, yeah? What's that?
He is one of the fellow people, such as people who work at Disney and DreamWorks, who has drawn dodgy Robin Chopper stuff from One Piece.
Ah.
I was going to say he's a member of the Illuminati or something, but...
Yeah, he's one of the gang.
I don't want to know which gang.
The Robin Chopper gang.
It's vague and it's underworldy.
And slightly furry as well.
Underworld furs.
Oh, that's just wrong. Oh, and kind of gross. Which I suppose these drawings are.
Sorry, furries. We accept everyone. We don't judge here.
Yeah, he's just kind of one of those people where he just kind of like started off drawing stuff like that, then somehow got his own TV show, and then that turned into Invader Zim. And it's like, this stuff's on DeviantArt. Were they not aware of that?
I don't like a lot of manga artists start out that way, drawing porn.
Not necessarily. Yeah. Not necessarily.
Some do.
Some do, but not all of them. I know that, what's her name, Higashimura, who does Princess Jellyfish, definitely didn't start out that way.
Mm.
The person who did Food Wars definitely did start out that way.
Oh, yeah. You can tell.
Yeah.
How can you tell?
It's the drawing style. It literally
the
is
drawing
just
the style.
Yeah, it is the drawing style. I hate to put it in those terms, but if you use the art style of particular manga creators, you can usually tell which ones have actually worked on hentai before because of the way they draw. And it's not just the way they design the characters. It's everything from the background, whether they use any visual effects, how they design the characters themselves. There's lots of things that come into it, but you can usually tell.
Pretty much, it's not like it's a bad thing. I mean, it's a good way to start off drawing anatomy and stuff like that. It's just,
well, I mean, the thing is, they use it, they get a name for themselves, they move into the big leagues. It works for Japan, and people obviously think that their manga, when they actually come out, the non-hentai stuff, are quite popular. So, you know, fair play to them.
Yeah.
I love how it
only took us like a few minutes to go from like Invader Zim down to hentai.
Mark led us down that route. Okay.
It's via Robin Chopper. This is kind of like my thing here.
Why do the tangents always go to the gutter?
Yes, they do. And speaking of which, complete tangent here, but I just want to call something out there, right? I called it with the Smurfs. I was actually right. I was bloody well right.
What have they done with the Smurfs?
No, because...
That Gargamel!
No, Tucky, do you remember when we saw the trailer for the Smurfs? And I said...
Yes.
I said, it's probably going to be...
It's all going to be women.
Yeah, it's going to be Amazon Smurfs.
Yes.
And what is it? It's bloody well Amazon Smurfs. It's a village of Amazon female Smurfs.
Amazon Smurf, isn't that an oxymoron? Like, aren't Smurfs small? Isn't that their thing?
No, they're all. I'm saying it's all. They're all female warrior Smurfs, kind of thing.
Right.
Oh, female warrior Smurfs. I thought you meant Amazon as in like the Smurfs come and like deliver like manga and books and DVDs to your door or something.
Smurf drone.
Oh my god, the planet is doomed. If your first thought,
delivered this set of books to you, just sign here.
Seriously, if your first thought for Amazon was the company and not the actual rainforest.
I can't get. I've got an image now of Delivery Smurf in my head.
Postman Smurf and Gargamel's cat. It's no longer Robin Chopper.
Postman Smurf and Gargamel's cat. Chat?
Gargamel's chat? What?
This conversation is out there.
It's all gone horribly wrong. Tucky, I blame you. It's your first show back for a while. Look at what you've done. Are you proud of yourself?
I've got a large package.
My avatar is pretty proud of this conversation. It's a mess.
Okay, leaving that to one side, let's move on to ReZero, which is the current flavor of the month. And ReZero, there's a Japanese VR maker called Gugenka, and they've announced a ReZero Life is a Different World by VR, which is an upcoming VR app for smartphones that will let you spend quality time and rest on Rem's lap.
Oh, isn't that lovely? Oh, that's so adorable, that is.
I really, really, really want this game.
They've got two volumes of Resting Head on Lap and Bed Sharing. They're going to be available for 960 yen each.
Rem is the worst waifu, so, like, screw this app.
No, Rem's...
Just
Rem's
kidding, I've never watched the series. I don't know anyone in it.
Rem's best grill.
The only thing I really know about it is insert name here, Guskida. And that's a meme or something.
No, it's one of those things that's kind of like, it sounds cute, but it's just going to be, like, used for, like, wrong things.
Like Robin Chopper stuff.
Yeah. I've just got this image of, like, people buying, like, these PSV. I'm assuming it's coming to the PlayStation anyway. These
no,
PSVRs.
No, no,
and
no,
just, like...
no. It's not PSV. It's not PSVR. It's smartphone VR.
So it's one of those strap
that's
your...
That's even better.
No, it's basically...
one of those strap your iPhone to your face things, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Which means you could be at a convention. You could be in the park. You could be at the supermarket. You could be on a bus and you could rest your head on Rem's lap or even
it
share a
like
bed with Rem.
Awesome. Sounds like something perfect for homeless people who own phones. forget food banks, get them all smartphones and a VR headset and they're sorted. Who
you
needs
know
sustenance and food?
Since we're talking about it, are those mobile VR things any good or is it just kind of what you'd expect looking at your screen up close?
It's
pretty much.
No, it's terrible.
Yeah,
it's absolute awful.
The technology is developing at a pace though, which is kind of weird because you can do so much with smartphones these days and the technology for smartphones is becoming more and more advanced, which is one of the reasons why we won't give aid to South Sudan and places like that because they've got rare earth metals that big companies want and there's no global conspiracy over rare earth metals and technology. There isn't, honest.
Yeah, let's just like shed lots of blood over that. That would be useful, I bet.
Well, some of the rare earth metals that are now amongst the most expensive things on the planet per gram.
Wait, I have a solution to this. I have a really good solution to this, right?
Okay.
What if, and it's a bit outside of the box, but why don't we all just share?
Communist.
You, sir, are correct.
I'm just really
I'll put the Daily Mail down.
So I just really hope that they go back and reverse port this into the Virtual Boy so we don't have to unlock RAM because REM will automatically be red and black.
Yeah, and after you finish, you've got a headache.
Why don't you be resting on Rem's lap so you'll just like rest there?
You'll still have a headache.
Oh, we're there. Just thinking there, right? It's commercial opportunity. Are they selling like lap body pillows with this?
No.
Ah, oh, they're missing a trick then.
Yeah,
you get one of them tubular.
All the leg things.
Kind of. Yeah.
No, they did that though. They actually did kind of the thigh pillow type thing, which looked like a girl's thighs.
Yeah.
And it was a VR kit.
But did they tell us like an accessory to go along with this app, or have they not thought that far ahead?
No. This was previously. I think this was a couple of years ago. They actually had a VR game, I suppose you call it. It was before Summer Lesson and stuff like that. And they had this pillow, which was basically a girl kneeling on the floor, and the pillow was just her thighs. And you could rest your head on it. And in the game, you would be resting on her lap. And in real life, you'd be resting on a section of her body.
I'm just shaking my head. Not because of the whole, like, oh, look at all this anime stuff and blah, 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 blah. But just that everything that, I guess, the average human typically wants deep down inside is just being, like, produced on an easily accessible level. So eventually, like, we're just all going to exist all in our own individual glass chambers with a VR headset. You know, maybe a drip for food and stuff, and that's it.
The Matrix is what we're going to end up in.
Uh-huh.
So the Wachowskis were right. We're doomed. Right, leaving that to one side, let's move on to a very strangely named accessory to the really popular Yuri on Ice anime series. It's getting a plush pouch. Now, I believe that's kind of a purse-type thing, plushy. And it is a Katsudon Piroshki plush pouch called Grandpa's Special Flavor.
The Katsudon pouch, like the food.
Yeah.
It's Grandpa's Special Flavor.
Well, according to
Granddad's special recipe.
Grandpa's butter candy. You'll never eat Werther's Originals the same way again.
You don't eat them, you suck them.
Whatever, and different people have different tastes. There's more than one way to get things done, you know?
Yes. A piroshki is a traditional Eastern European bread that's stuffed with toppings and then fried or baked. And Yuri Plisetsky's grandfather, Nikolai Plisetsky, in the anime, makes him a bag of Katsudon piroshki in episode 9 of the anime. And now they've basically made a plush pouch of that.
Because, of course.
Yes.
Hey, if it's memeable enough, why not? That's how marketing works now, right?
I'm sorry, I can't believe they haven't done a Paul Cutler ball plushie, that if they're going to go down that road.
Yeah.
No, they might as well.
I'm sure they have.
Well, if they have, good fair play to them, but if you've got to do stupid food plushies, might as well go for all.
Katsudon is pork, isn't it? It's like pork udon. Well, I don't know, whatever. The point being is, like, why they're making plushies of food.
This is Yuri on Ice. Of all the things in Yuri on Ice they could make a plushie out of, the bread is not my first choice. Because you have all of the characters, for a start, that you could make a plushie out of.
Yeah, but they're not as interesting as the food.
You'd think people would rather snuggle with those more than the food, though. But, hey, I'm going to like preemptively groan for this, but I think they should put that idea on ice.
Yeah.
I think, to be honest, it's one of those things. It's like Yuri on Ice got like so popular so quick, and they trundled out all of the merchandise so quick. They've actually already ran out of merchandise to flog to people. So now they're kind of just grasping at straws.
Just making stuff up, huh? Yeah.
Pretty much. The past few months, pretty much as soon as it started, they kind of like started trundling pretty much everything you could think out for that series. Except actual figures, which I couldn't understand.
Except Yuri in the Yuri in hot tub. That's what all the people want.
Definitely. And it probably will happen eventually.
Yes.
Yuri on Ice, more like Yaoi on Ice, huh?
The one joke everybody expected to happen about a Yuri on Ice conversation.
Right. Moving on to Japan's fetish for anthropomorphizing things. And I call it a fetish because it bloody well is.
It's getting a bit old, isn't it?
Oh, no, you don't want them
anthropomorphic. No pun intended.
I was about to say you don't want the old anthropomorphic versions of things. They only want the young, fresh ones, okay? DMM Games, they do all sorts of mobile games. They do all sorts of app-based games, like Fleet Girls Collection, Kantai Collection, Token Ranbu, various others, yeah? And yeah, they have a game that they have been developing, which is planned for release in the summer, called Yashiro Nihoeto, or Nihoto, or whatever you want to call it. And the game has caused a bit of controversy because they've basically taken certain Shinto shrines and turned the shrines into moe anime girls.
Japan's going to be so mad, or at least some people will be.
No,
I'm guessing that's what that's about.
Well, some of the shrines have basically said, we don't want our name associated with this because religion is important to us, our belief is important to us, and you're basically demeaning our belief by making our belief into a cute girl wearing cat ears with her midriff showing. So people believe what they believe, but I mean, I'd hate to see Japan try this with like Christianity or Hinduism or Judaism or even Islam.
I want to say that. I want to see an anthropomorphized Vatican.
I want to see it now. I want to see that too, but I'm less interested in the anthropomorphization in itself and more just the resulting sort.
They can remake Father Ted.
You can never remake Father Ted.
Anthropomorphize Craggy Island.
Wow, look at those peaks.
No, because now I'm remembering Armageddon and the mountainous peaks.
Oh,
that was such a horrible film. Please don't make me remember it.
It's been a long time. Must be its 20th anniversary coming up soon.
But yeah, one of the shrines represented is the Iwashimizu Hachimangu in Kyoto, who asked for their name not to be used without their permission, because DMM Games on the website for this shrine game have been giving out good and bad fortunes on their website. They're like, no, we don't like what you're doing.
No, it doesn't sound... It's kind of one of those things that you just don't really go too close to do, you know what I mean?
Even better is Katsuji Iwahashi, who's the head of international foreign relations for the Association of Shinto Shrines, has said, I've never seen anything like this. As someone with religious faith, this isn't something that evokes good feelings. What on earth was their basis for doing something like this? And I have to ask the same thing. What were you thinking when you basically decided to make the shrines for Japan's biggest religion into anthropomorphic girls?
Well, I'm thinking in the year 2500, when we develop the means to communicate with the spirit world, we should have someone show up and just be like, hey, actually, you know, looks kind of like me. I approve.
Man,
you guys that pray to me, you're too uptight. You know, loosen up a little.
But yeah, it's one of those things that's kind of like Japan just wants to do. Like, I mean, we've got like a big, big thing of just doing this over and over again, like anthropomorphizing like everything.
They just got to make everything cute these days, and it's, I guess, what easier way to do that than anime? Maybe they should come up with something else.
I can understand that, and I also understand that you can't really make an old, balding Shinto priest cute. Because,
but you can.
Well, it depends on how.
Isn't there an anime coming out about a monk or something, a Shinto monk, and it's like a proper shoujo or something like that?
Yeah, yes, there is. It's an old story. We won't go there. We won't talk about what monks used to get up to.
Religious and pious things, I'd imagine.
On the other hand, I mean, from looking at the other like perspective, they could have been doing it to try and attract more tourism to these shrines, but I think it might attract the wrong kind of tourism.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to want the kind of people it's drawing in.
The thing that puzzles me about this is that Shinto shrines often appear in anime. And Lucky Star did a thing. They did a thing at one of the shrines that was featured in Lucky Star. And what they did, they made arrangements with Kyoto Animation and had the characters of Lucky Star actually around the shrine promoting various things at the shrine, which was a nice thing to do. And it was kind of cute the way they did it and kind of kooky as well. Why not just stick with that? It was working fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Someone's got to ruin it at some point. Yes. It's always the case. I'm just thinking there because we're going on about anthropomorphization. And this year for SunnyCon's art book, the theme is going to be anthropomorphized Northeast landmarks.
DMM Games beat you to it then.
And I'm just checking to make sure that there's actually nothing that could offend people.
How many how many drunken, stumbling blonde girls covered in gaudy neon lights and tight dresses are there going to be?
I think the Millennium Bridge is going to be done. I've got the list in front of us now of what we're going to be anthropomorphizing. So we've got the Tyne Bridge, the Millennium Bridge, the Angel of the North, Earl Grey's Monument, a Metro.
I'm not even going to say anything about my first thought about Earl Grey's Monument.
The Centre of Life's going to be anthropomorphized, the Discovery Museum, the River Tyne itself, the Chinese Arch, a Greggs.
Oh, yes.
If you've got a Greggs in there, you got to get like a Club Chan in there or something.
Alnwick Castle and Gardens, Beamish Museum, Durham Cathedral is going to be anthropomorphized. So that's the one where I'm thinking we're going to cause outrage with.
Oh, no. I think Beamish Museum is the one that I would cause outrage with, because Beamish Museum, you could, on a good day, find something like the Flying Scotsman there, or even Stevenson's Rocket.
Well, we've got the new Weir Crossing. The Sunderland Museum and Winter Gardens is getting their treatment, and Hilton Castle.
Oh,
Hilton Castle.
So Hilton Castle, that old decrepit thing on the outskirts of town.
So if I just give you a picture of Paris Hilton, is that fine?
I was tempted to ask if I could put some mutton shunters in there because she's that kind of girl.
So you know what a mutton shunter is?
All right.
You listened to that episode, Literary Loitering, then.
Yes.
When we found those insults, it was very, very surreal and kind of glorious at the same time.
So anyway, anthropomorphization of shrines. Not good for religious people, great for perverts.
And on that note, I think we'll take a break. We'll be back in a moment with some animation. And I'm using the general term animation because we have animation.
The world of comics and manga are much, much more complex than I'll ever know. So tune in to 4Panel on the Geek Show Podcast Network to make that whole world a little less intimidating.
Hello, and we are back with Keyframe, and we've got animation reviews next because, do I have to say why every time? We've got animation reviews, let's get one with it.
So okay. I'll go first then. This week, and for the past God knows how long, I've been watching Rock Lee and his ninja friends.
Is it friends or pals? I'm pretty sure it's pals.
Pals or friends, kind of the same thing.
Chums.
No, because...
Rock Lee...
Hang on. Of the words friends, pals and chums, only one of them couldn't be classified as dog food.
Rock Lee and his ninja acquaintances. Anyway, so this is obviously from the popular-ish Naruto series, which just ended, and there were celebrations. But they decided to take a whole spin-off because after 500 episodes of Naruto, apparently fans demanded more. So they gave him his own story in super deformed animation.
They got families to feed, man. They got to keep making that stuff.
The horse isn't dead until it's being flogged so much. And and this horse is, it's well past it. It's dead as it is. Anyway, sticking on with Rock Lee, they've decided to go with a more comical gag sort of feel to it.
Okay.
And when I say gag, I use the term loosely because gag suggests that there's going to be comedy in it, whereas... In Rock Lee and his ninja pals, there's not so much comedy, more of 26 episodes of sit there and wonder why you're sitting there. I thought I'd be able to find some kind of comedy in it because in the main series of Naruto, there was kind of a comedic aspect to Rock Lee's character. Obviously, the bowl cut, the really tight green leotard, his weird relationship with Guy Sensei, and they've decided to make it... As a spin-off, he's smaller and creepier.
Okay.
And it doesn't really play well.
Okay.
And
okay.
like I say, they've got 26 episodes of this, and I was tired after the first one. I mean, like, physically, it drains you watching this show.
And on the full episode, although they're just short 5-minute things.
No, these are full-on 20-minute episodes with, like, 5 minutes of introduction, and they managed to fit two 10-minute episodes into that.
Okay.
I mean, I can't express how it's kind of like, it's annoying, it's boring, it's anticlimactic, all rolled into one, sort of like this big ball of disappointment, this steaming ball of disappointment. And it's really childish humor.
Yeah.
And I understand, like, yes, it's gag, but it doesn't play well. And it's kind of self-aware that it's crap. It's self-aware crap.
What does that mean? Like, it's aware it's actually bad, or, like, has it got some weird sort of lame jokes, everyone laughing going on?
Well, it's kind of a mix of both, really, because in one of the episodes, it's like, this is Naruto Uzumaki, who's also the star of his own show. And he goes from, like, super deformed Naruto to, like, normal-sized Naruto, and then back to super deformed Naruto. It's like, yeah, plug your own show. It's like, why? It's like, we're watching this because we've watched Naruto. Why are you trying to sell me Naruto in Naruto?
To be fair, I feel like in the main series, I've seen Naruto adverts in them. Like, at the end, they'd start, like, promoting themselves in a weird sort of commercial format.
Yeah, but that's commercial, but
yeah, it's
that's
a comedy.
Like next episode, but on Rock Lee, it's like, what's the need for it? I mean, Naruto's got his own show. We're here to watch Rock Lee. What's Naruto doing here as, like, the main character? But anyway, they tried to do a good job with Rock Lee, but his character can only do so much. He can't do ninjutsu. We've already got that from the main series, and then they drag it out through this whole spin-off thing of, well, he can't do ninjutsu, but here's some of the comedic ways he can. And there's this one episode where he's going up against Naruto, and they're fighting over a mission for some kind of cake or something. And he's going like, oh, Naruto does his sexy harem ninjutsu. Rock Lee tries to do it, but instead it's Rock Lee in a two-piece bikini running so fast so it looks like there's lots of them.
And it sounds funny when you say it, but
yeah, I make it funny. That's how bad it is. I can make it sound funny. It's. I mean, these special moves are like just pulling people's pants down, or trying to avoid stepping in dog turd.
So it sounds like they made an even more childish version of Naruto.
Yeah,
even though the series kind of felt that it was already pretty silly, childish.
Yeah. I mean, I can understand the gag aspect of it, but it didn't work as a gag anime. And just as a spin-off, it's just, I don't know, it just seemed like overkill. It's like, yes, we've seen Naruto. Oh, look, Rock Lee. Oh, no. Why do it?
Yeah.
I mean, 26 episodes as well. I mean, somebody's got sat down in a boardroom and said, you know what, we need more of this. After the first episode, like I'm saying, I'm out.
That was probably the end of the board meeting, to be honest, because it's Naruto. They'll make money off it either way.
So the show's straight up crackers. It's too weird. And I like weird. So, I mean, even the aspects of the comedy angle is they do like different skits, and they even do a few cutaway gags, like, you know, on Family Guy, but it works for Family Guy. On this one, there was one episode where Rock Lee's like, oh, I know somebody who was also chased by a debt collector, and it cuts to a scene where he's listening in on Guy Sensei on his answering machine, and Guy Sensei is being chased up for overdue movie rentals.
Yeah.
And the actual, like, the titles of the movies, like, kind of give it Guy Sensei a more dark, perverted. Two seconds. I've got the name of them. It's like After School Ecstasy.
Ooh.
It's like your copy of After School Ecstasy, your copy of After School Escapades. And I'm like, wow, that power of you,
well,
that power of youth that he always goes on about, it's a bit sinister now.
I was hoping by after school it meant like people above school age, but I'm guessing not.
No, it's like, why is this guy teaching children? Why is this guy within 5-mile radius of any school or public play park? If he's it's. Why is this movie rental place got this kind of material to give to this guy?
Yeah.
Kamoshida!
It raises more questions than it answers, to be honest. But it's that kind of comedy, and it's 26 episodes of solid rubbish. And I'm not really passionate about hating something as much as I hate Rock Lee. It's made us hate the character because I've spent so much of my life now watching this rubbish. And I mean, even the crows in it, these little animated crows would shout, idiot. No, it's like, idiot, idiot, idiot. It's like they're going through the whole series mocking you for watching it.
Awesome. That sounds quite funny, but I'm guessing not when you actually have to suffer for it. But I was thinking, like, you know, surely there's something that can save it. I mean, like Mark mentioned, actually, you know, add more filler. I mean, do they have what's under Kakashi's mask round two? Because that could save it.
No.
Oh.
They don't.
Well, it's trash. Never mind.
It's basically mostly Rock Lee coping with not being able to use ninjutsu, being slightly comedic and creepy at the same time, and trying to avoid stepping in dog crap. That's basically the gist of 26 episodes of this show, all the while being mocked.
Class.
So if you like Naruto and you've got nothing better to do with your time, if that noose is like tempting, but you're not quite there yet.
Sorry.
Give Rock Lee a chance, but you know, if not, just avoid it. Go straight for the noose.
Wow.
Suicidal Rock Lee. Mm.
Is there something that actually does slightly redeem it? Because I've read a little bit of the manga, and there was one thing that redeemed it as opposed to the actual Naruto series, in that they made Tenten into an actual character.
Well, she's more of a sidekick. Her and Neji are more sidekicks than anything else. She's just like the Rock Lee's been zany, I'll hit him with me paper fan. And that's basically her bit. Like I say, if you want to watch it, watch it. You know, be my guest. Enjoy whatever you do in dark rooms. I'm not bothered about. But this, for me, it was a waste of my time. And I think if you truly like Naruto, stick with Naruto, because like rewatching every filler episode is probably is worth more of your time than watching this.
Mm, God,
wow!
Only positive I can bring from it is the art style's canny and the voice acting's decent.
Wow. And I thought I was going to give it a bad review if I actually did it myself.
There's much better series out there than this. There are so much better anime out there than this like side bit gag crap. And
well, it's interesting because, you know, you were talking about it being kind of with the cutaways and everything, like Family Guy and stuff like that. My first thought was Astro Fighter Sunred. And I thought, well, hang on, is it trying to be a show like that? Only it failed horribly, whereas Astro Fighter Sunrise succeeded.
If it is, it's insulting.
Yeah.
If it's even trying to be, if this show's trying to be like any other show, that other show should like hunt it down and kill it.
Yes.
Because I wouldn't like my name anywhere near this kind of art, this kind of entertainment, this kind of form of entertainment. Keep my name well away from it. I wouldn't be within a 5 mile radius of it.
Okay. Cool. So, my turn next, is it?
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so I had something interesting. I had an interesting animated motion comic, which...
Motion comic?
Yeah, motion comic. And it has the word animated in it, which is why it qualifies. But it also has the word comic in it, and it's also on DVD as a movie. So I was actually confused about which show this should be on. Should it be on Keyframe, or should it be on Four Paddle, where we do comics, or should it be on Cinema Eclectica, where we do movies? So, in future, people who make stuff like this, please define, what is it? Animated motion comic.
It's like they know how to mess with us. Just us in particular.
Yeah, I know. So anyway, this is Realm of the Damned, Tenebris Dios, and ironically enough, it is actually a graphic novel that came out in 2016, by Alex Wally and Simon Parr, who also goes by the name Pi Parr, because, well, he's an artist, so why not? And I've actually read the graphic novel version of this, and what they've done, they've taken the graphic novel, the pictures from the graphic novel, and given them bits of animation and put voices to it, and the voices they picked for it are interesting, to say the least. The characters are voiced by David Vincent, who's from the band Morbid Angel, Danny Filth, the leader of Cradle of Filth, Jill Janis, who's the lead singer from Huntress, and Steve Beatty from Oktoberfile. The movie's directed by Tim Peyton, but I call it direction. It's not really that much direction because it's an animated motion comic, and I don't know how much direction you need for something that's already been written, and all you're doing is just putting some animation on the actual panels from the comic.
Mm.
The actual story itself is what drives this. And if you like your horror, if you like your classic horror monsters, this is kind of going to be your thing. Because the story is basically about Albert Van Helsing. And Albert Van Helsing, he works with books a lot and he works with knowledge a lot. He kind of considers himself a bit of a philosopher. And he comes home one day to find his son raving. His wife doesn't know what's going on. And he diagnoses it as his son having cholera. How wrong he was, because his son has basically become a vampire and he's forced to kill his son, and because of that his wife kills herself, so everything in his life is lost, and so he goes a bit mad and decides to hunt down the princes of darkness and becomes really good at it. That's the intro to this thing. And then after that it basically spins on years later, and somehow in the intervening time between Van Helsing becoming this vampire and monster hunter to kind of, I think, just a little bit past the current era, the vampires have taken over. And you have vampires actually in the Vatican City and running things. The main story starts off with the Sons of Balor, who are a black metal band from Sweden, because why not? And they are in a church, and the leader of the band has taken one of the band members, beat the living snot out of him, and tied him up in the church. They're going to burn the church down, but they've strapped this mask, which has, like, the lower jaw with canines on it, to this guy's face while he's tied up. And then they walk out after setting fire to the church, and somehow or other, Balor, a vampire lord who fought at the right-hand side of Vlad the Impaler, has risen again through this ritual that they've conducted, which is why they chose the name Sons of Balor as their band. The other two band members die, and this guy, the leader, he's still alive. Balor wants revenge on his sister who killed him. His sister is Athena Petrova, and she is currently one of the commanders of the new congregation over at the Vatican. So the Vatican is basically dyed in the blood of innocence, and the vampires rule. Van Helsing is kind of caught in the middle of this fight between Balor and his sister. And the world is basically hell on earth. It's just no one realizes it. Now, overall, Realm of the Damned is a very, very simple story of, you've got a guy, he's a bit of an anti-hero, he's a bit of a renegade, he's caught in the middle and he has to try and fight his way out and think his way out. And you've got some interesting characters that appear. Nefertiti, for example, isn't just a mummy. She is basically a cyborg mummy, which is kind of cool, I think. You have the werewolves, you have vampires, you have all sorts of other things. And overall, it is very much a monster mash. It is all of these kind of classic horror characters and creatures fighting against each other. I'm perfectly cool with that. And it's only about an hour long, so it's easy to watch as well. And if you're into your horror comics, if you're into your horror cartoons or anime, then this might actually be your thing. I've got to say it's actually quite good, and I didn't actually think I'd say that about this, because when it came through, when I saw the cover, I thought, Realm of the Damned, this looks kind of boring. But Alec Wally has actually worked on 2000 AD, and Realm of the Damned was originally serialized, the graphic novel was serialized first in the Judge Dredd comic, so you know, it's got a good pedigree, and there's a lot of good stuff that has come out from 2000 AD historically. The presentation of this is actually quite good. They picked some good musicians to play the roles, because there's a very heavy metal theme to this, and there's a lot of heavy metal music that plays throughout the actual piece. But I think that this is only going to have a limited appeal, and only for people who are really, really into this sort of thing, or actual fans of the bands who feature in this, the voices who feature in this.
Yeah.
I don't think this is going to have a broad appeal to animation fans in general, because it is primarily a comic book that's animated. And so there's no real skill in the animation. It's very, very basic. You know?
Right, I was wondering about that, like what an animated comic is.
Yeah, it's very basic. And you know how and sometimes you take a picture and you basically flex part of the picture to make it look as though something is happening?
I see, kind of like how a lot of visual novels do animation these days, like the Neptunia games and whatnot.
Something sort like of. That, but I mean, it's kind of a combination of different techniques. There are several techniques they use, because
I guess it generally involves like a static image being manipulated in various ways.
Yeah, basically. So
could look visually interesting, though.
It is visually interesting, but a lot of that is down to the artwork itself. And Simon Parr, very good artist, but you can tell he's a very specific type of artist. He'd probably do really well on, DC's Lobo or something like that. He'd probably work really well with a comic like that, or Slain, which used to be part of the 2000 AD stuff, and also in Heavy Metal as well. But, as I said, Realm of the Damned, I think it's got limited appeal. I don't think it's going to appeal to everyone. I think you have to be a Heavy Metal fan, a horror fan, or a fan of horror animation or anime to actually want to sit down and watch this. Or you have to be a fan of the bands who are involved or the graphic novel itself to sit down and watch this.
I know somebody will enjoy something like this. So. Yeah.
Overall, it's actually quite enjoyable. And I was surprised at how much I actually did enjoy it. It's not a great story. The characters are very, very shallow. They don't really have any depth to them. Aside from Albert Van Helsing, you don't really get to know much about the other characters. You know that Balor and his sister, they have a relationship, but you don't know anything about what drove her, I've forgotten her name, Athena Petrova. You don't know anything about what drove Athena Petrova to kill her brother.
Yeah.
You know, her brother has some secret that he wants to deny, because you find that out, but you don't know what that secret is. So it doesn't really resolve any of the questions it asks. It leaves it completely open-ended. It is an issue, but even with that, it's just kind of, yeah, it was an hour of my time, but it was a fun hour. I don't really need to examine it too much, even though I just have.
Sugoi.
Well, as long as you have fun for it, that's all that counts really, isn't it? I mean,
yeah.
As Tucky says, the amount of things that's coming out where you'll just hate it for the entire duration, for like 24 episodes.
I'll be honest.
26 episodes.
Yeah, 26 episodes. I'll be honest, when I picked this up, I thought I'd actually given Tucky the better of the two, because I thought, okay, Realm of the Damned, it looks a bit ropey. It's probably not going to be that good. Prejudging it just based off what I was seeing in front of me. It's not going to be that good. Looks a bit ropey. And so I'll give Rockley to Tucky because it seems like the better one. And I'll do Realm of the Damned myself. But it seems like I actually lucked out here. Sorry. It seems like I actually lucked out on this one, Tucky. And I didn't mean to.
All according to my evil plan.
Please don't. I already have enough trouble with people thinking I'm a supervillain.
Just do a cute or evil laugh and then you'll go under everyone's radar.
No. I don't do that sort of evil laugh. So, over to you, Mark, for the big finish.
Yes, we're going to go from supervillains to superheroes, because I have been watching, re-watching, Tiger and Bunny The Rising, which is, I wouldn't say the epilogue or the final installment to the Tiger and Bunny franchise.
Okay.
Which started, it was an anime series that aired back in 2011. Now, because this is the end of it, I'm just going to quickly go over some of the stuff that happens in the original series, because, dear God, that is a great series. So, Tiger and Bunny is set in an alternate world where people get superpowers known as Next. And so, as always, with superpowers, we get superheroes. However, these superheroes all compete on a reality TV show. So, when they catch a criminal, they get points. And at the end of the season, one of them is crowned King of Heroes.
I just want to point out, they all have sponsorship deals with different companies.
I was just about to get to that. All of the superheroes have sponsorship deals. So we have Blue Rose, who is sponsored by Pepsi.
Sorry, I remember the Go Next adverts in the series.
Pepsi Next, and basically she's kind of like the superhero.
Girl. She's
well,
the poster girl for Pepsi
who
Next.
Has like the skimpy clothes, and after whenever she after a TV show, she always like advertises and is like, "Oh yes, drink Pepsi, it's hot and this will cool you down," and all that jazz that you would expect from kind of not from a superhero, but from a rare. Well, just a TV advert, really.
Do you know the interesting thing, though? When Tiger and Bunny came out, Pepsi actually started selling Pepsi Next in Japan.
Yeah, it was a lot of the stuff that... I mean, it was great how they got all of like the tie-in stuff. Mm. They had Ustream as well, which was like for Sky... I think it was Sky High who had it.
Yeah.
And it was Ustream who was originally streaming the series. And in one of the episodes, Sky High actually gets beaten. And at the exact same time when Sky High got beaten, Ustream actually went off completely for like a few hours. I wasn't sure if it was like just them taking a wobbler or just kind of like that was one of the things. But the whole series of Tiger and Bunny, it's really about, well, the main character is a man named Katetsu T. Kabaragi. Yep. And I hope I pronounced that right.
Yep.
Who is kind of like the veteran hero. He's probably 40, late 40s.
Yeah.
Mid-40s, and he is partnered with a young hero named Barnaby Brooks Jr. They both have the same superpower. However, because while Tiger is like the veteran, the older one, he, over the course of the series, he is starting to find that he's losing a bit of his superpowers.
I just want to jump in for a second, Mark.
Yeah.
If you don't mind. Yeah, I always found it hilarious how this whole thing with Wild Tiger. When I went back and watched Tiger and Bunny, the whole Wild Tiger bit, I just thought, he just needs a little blue pill.
because his power is like, he's super strong for 5 minutes, which slowly decreases over the course of the series.
Yeah. And Barnaby Brooks Jr. is basically Batman. He is.
Yeah. Literally. Well, I wouldn't say literally all of them. A lot of the characters are based on superheroes. Like, Wild Tiger is kind of supposed to be Superman, with Barnaby being Batman as the young, popular, slightly more popular hero who kind of replaces Wild Tiger as it goes along.
Well, not just that. I mean, look at Barnaby Brooks Jr.'s backstory. Both his parents murdered under mysterious circumstances. He's the sole heir to this massive fortune.
Exactly. I mean, we've got Sky High, who is literally the Rocketeer.
Yep.
I can't remember what the others are kind of like based on other superheroes, but I'm not really sure which.
The Pepsi
ones
Next they... girl is basically she's either Killer Frost or Ice.
Yeah.
From Justice League. Well, Killer Frost is a supervillain, so I'd say Ice from Justice League.
Yeah. Rock Bison, which you don't see superpowers during the series at all, except in the first movie, but he can turn his body into rock. So kind of like the Thing.
Hang on. When you say rock, do you mean rock as in rock, or do you mean rock as in the rock?
Rock as in stone rock.
Right, okay. I just wanted to clarify that, because I have to check these things after you guys thought Amazon, and the first thing you thought was the bookstore.
Thinking you don't want to deal with triple meanings again, like, you know, if he turned into sound, that would be pretty strange.
Yes.
But yeah, like a lot of the heroes are based on other characters, and I'm not going to lie, the original series had one of, if not the best Jokers in recent history.
Yes.
At least better compared to the Suicide Squad one.
Oh,
and a decent Harley Quinn as well.
Tucky's a better Joker than Jared Leto.
Do I take that as a compliment or an insult?
Well, it means Don is Harley Quinn.
Do you want to see my scars?
We don't.
Has Donna been beating you up again?
Wow, domestic abuse jokes.
I'm saying, I'm in the car early and she's beating us up. She's like, no one will believe you. You can tell whoever you want, no one's going to believe you.
And you decide to tell us.
Yeah. Somebody should help, but everyone's just going to laugh at us.
Send and help anyway. Buy a keyframe.
So real, man.
Back to your review, Mark.
So yeah, we're going to leave the main series aside there. That was kind of just like the backstory. But So Tiger and Bunny the Risen is kind of the whole end to the series for now.
Okay.
Because I really don't want this series to end. I really hope, I'm still hoping that there's more. So basically, the overall plot of Tiger and Bunny the Risen is that Katetsu, because his powers are almost gone now, he's been relegated to kind of like the sideshow. He's like the second league of superheroes, which kind of just do like odd jobs around the town, like kind of like getting cats out of trees and just patrolling the area.
Does he still advertise how long his power lasts for? Is he still Wild Tiger?
I think it's down to a minute.
Yeah, because
at this point,
at the end of the series, when you know when Barnaby looks down, when they look down, they see him running after some guy. He's got on the back Wild Tiger 1 minute. That's why I suddenly thought of the little blue pills. He's a Wild Tiger for 1 minute.
Well, that kind of is the whole thing, isn't it? He just kind of like gets super strong and becomes like a powerful tiger for 1 minute. So yeah, he's kind of like in the second league with Barnaby because now they're like the best friends and kind of like a kind of like homoerotic partnership between them, which we're not going to get too much into. So the TV show is taken over by a new manager who promptly fires Katetsu because, well, he's kind of useless, and moves Barnaby back into the first league where Sky High and Blue Rose and all the others are. He then partners Barnaby with a new superhero who was kind of like the very new hot kind of thing, who's kind of full of himself and kind of a little bit like what Barnaby was in the first few episodes of the series, only even more of a jerk.
Yeah.
And then there's kind of this whole prophecy, which was never mentioned in the series, and the kind of there's a few superheroes, well, supervillains who's trying to get that back together. Really, the whole of the film is kind of like there's not much to it. It's a fun film. It's about an hour and a half or so, but it's kind of one of those films where it kind of feels like Avengers: Age of Ultron, where they kind of just threw a story out of nowhere, and it was kind of like, yeah, this is cool. I'm happy with more of this. They do try and end it off a little bit more with kind of Katetsu like losing his powers a little bit more. But there is still a lot more they can easily do with it.
Yeah.
But what I love about this film is that they do a lot with the characters they've got. And each and every character has an amazing design. Like, animation-wise, this is... like, the whole series of Tiger and Bunny is one of my favourite series animation-wise because even every single minor character, even like the random bank robbers in the first episode, all look completely unique. As opposed to just having the generic guy who steals a purse and runs away. But the great thing about The Risen is that they do focus on a lot of the minor characters who didn't really get much of a chance to shine in the first series.
Okay.
Like they have kind of like one of the bosses who was kind of like the guy who was in charge, but now he's relegated to kind of just like carrying the tea. And you show that it shows that his life is kind of hard as well, being obviously being relegated down to being like the tea carrier. But he kind of just goes in, does his job because he's got to fund his family, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it was like, it added a nice little depth. And they also take a good 10 minutes to focus on Fire Emblem, who is, now, I don't want to upset anybody who's listened because I can't remember if he's a homosexual or if he's a transgender person.
I think he's a gay transvestite.
Yeah. But they really focus on him, showing how difficult it is growing up because they grow up with like these superpowers. It's shown early on in the TV series how they're kind of like persecuted for just being that. But also growing up a gay transvestite as with superpowers, it just makes it even more difficult. And it's actually one of the very few series that I actually really feel they did that kind of thing right in an anime, instead of being all this, oh look, they're gay, it's fan service. This was a real character that I felt was kind of getting through a difficult time because of the way the world was against them. And I really did appreciate how they did put that in the film, as opposed to just kind of, because Fire Emblem is, he's not really the joke, but he kind of is a bit of a joke in the first series. He's always used as a lot of the comedy relief, kind of like how Bon Clay was used as the comic relief in One Piece.
See, I always liked Fire Emblem. I thought Fire Emblem was was a good character.
To be honest, I don't dislike any of the characters in Tiger and Bunny. The only one I'm not completely sold with is Barnaby. The main cast is actually incredibly strong. And to be honest, overall, I kind of feel with Tiger and Bunny, I feel like a lot of the Western superhero things could learn a lot from this series because of the way it's styled, the way they develop the characters over the course of the series and the movie. It just feels like you grow attached to them a lot more than I've grown attached to, say, Iron Man in the Iron Man films.
Well, it's interesting you say that because I always applauded Tiger and Bunny for one particular thing, which was the live TV thing.
I really loved that aspect of it because it was so different, but it made sense because where else are they getting the money for just destroying these buildings while trying to get villains and stuff like that? It's like, who funds that? Well, obviously it's Pepsi and Domino's Pizza.
Well, not only that, I mean, if you think about it, if we had actual real superheroes, the networks would be following them day and night.
Exactly.
It'd be that weird voyeuristic thing that Big Brother is, but for superheroes. And they probably would have sponsorship deals. They probably would have reality TV shows for themselves, things like that.
Yeah.
You know, at home Batman.
Yeah, it's done really well, like the way they do the whole sponsorship, because it's kind of like, instead of watching football or something like that, you would go to a bar and watch the superheroes beat up villains.
Oh my God.
And that actually is a really good scene in the movie where Rock Bison, who throughout the entire series, I mean, he's kind of one of the least focused on characters. He doesn't really have much good luck in the entire series. He always ends up slipping up and letting the bad guys get away or something. There's actually a scene where there's people watching in the bar and Rock Bison actually takes down a villain and literally the whole bar gets up and just cheers. And you as a viewer kind of want to cheer too because Rock Bison has finally managed to do something. And it's just really good how they integrated all of this world around the superheroes by having the world focus on the superheroes.
Yeah.
I mean, the film isn't perfect. It still feels like there's a lot of stuff. I mean, they do focus on a lot of the characters. They don't focus so much on Blue Rose and Sky High, but they kind of got a lot more focus in the TV show, which is kind of fine. The only thing I don't like about it is that this is not a standalone film. You have to watch the TV series in order to see it. And at this point, I don't think there's an easy way to watch the TV series. I don't think it's streaming on anything at the moment, or I think the DVDs are quite long out of print. So it's kind of one of those ones where I'm kind of like, yeah, you really should watch it, but you might be stuck trying to watch it.
Wasn't it Anime Limited who distributed Tiger and Bunny originally?
No, it was...
Or was it Manga Entertainment?
It's Manga Entertainment under their... I don't know how you pronounce this. Their Kaze label or Kaze label?
Kaze.
Kaze, yeah.
Yeah, it's Kaze. It means wind.
Yeah.
That still exists, though?
It still exists. I just haven't seen the DVDs to buy in a long time. At least not in regular stores. I've seen, like, sometimes when you go to MCM, they tend to have not the odd DVD here and there, but it's not one where I tend to see it quite often.
It might be that you can only get it online.
Yeah. Unfortunately, as well, the DVDs are quite expensive. I paid about £100 for all four DVDs because it's a 24 episode, or is it 25? It's a full season, but it's one of those ones where they split into four different parts just to kind of sell more DVDs because Tiger and Bunny, when it was released, was a pretty huge thing. And unfortunately, it was one of those series that was in the wrong place at the wrong time because it came just before Attack on Titan. And I kind of feel like if it came afterwards, it probably would have gotten the attention it deserved over here.
See, I disagree. I think Tiger and Bunny came out at exactly the right time. I think Tiger and Bunny, if you look at it from just the anime fans' perspective, then yeah, you might think that Attack on Titan being the thing that it is, you know, maybe it would have been better coming out afterwards. But I actually think in terms of how pop culture was back in 2011, Tiger and Bunny actually came out at the perfect time because the superhero craze was just starting to gain a lot of momentum.
Yeah, so, I think the film came out before the original Avengers film came out as well. So it's like it's before just before we got all of them, or was around the same time, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was around the
same
time.
You think the anime?
And so I think it was, I think Tiger and Bunny, I think they timed it just about right on their release, because there was all that hype leading up to the Avengers and everything like that. And so it was capitalizing a little on that hype, which was, and the hype for that was much bigger than the hype for Attack on Titan.
Yeah, I mean, Tiger and Bunny was one of those series where it was absolutely huge when it came out, and now it kind of really, it was huge, but then it disappeared very quickly, it seemed.
It was, yeah, that's so exactly what happened.
I was going to say, do you think the anime sort of rendition of superheroes is going to transfer over to the superhero fan base?
Why not?
I mean, in this instance, do you think it has?
It has with certain people, myself, for example.
Yeah. Whenever somebody asks me about if they're trying to get an anime, and I know they like superheroes, I always recommend them Tiger and Bunny, even over something like One Punch Man, because this is like the kind of perfect. It's anime enough. It doesn't feel like a Western anime, but on the other hand, it kind of does, if you know what I mean.
See,
it's enough. Kind of stands out as its own thing with being a Japanese anime, but it does have a lot of stuff that would appeal to Western viewers as well.
See, my first port of call isn't Tiger and Bunny if they want superheroes in anime. My first port of call is Teen Titans.
Yeah.
Is that anime?
Not Teen Titans Go, by the way. No. The classic Teen Titans, aren't it?
Classic Teen Titans. The original one.
Yeah. Because Teen Titans Go is an abomination.
Yes, it is. But I go with that because it pretty much has everything that you want somebody to enjoy. Yeah. And then after that, I'd probably go with, I might suggest Tiger and Bunny, but Hero Man is also a good choice as well. And a lot of people have forgotten that. Stan Lee's first real foray into anime, just to show DC and Marvel, this is how you do it, boys.
Mm-hmm.
It turned out pretty decent.
Yeah, I mean, I heard good things about it.
Yeah, I'm waiting. I am very, very curious as to how the new project he's working on, The Reflection, is going to turn out.
Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully it'll be good.
Yes.
I just want to bring up one more thing about Tiger and Bunny the Horizon.
Okay.
Because the extras on this is absolutely brilliant. And if you've got an extra 10, 15 minutes afterwards, watch some of the extras because they are absolutely hilarious. They have basically what they've shown at the cinema before the film starts, and it's basically Sky High, Kotetsu, and, well, Wild Tiger and Barnaby in the actual superhero costumes teaching you proper cinema etiquette, and it's absolutely hilarious.
They did that before the Karada Kyokai movies as well. They had the...
It's definitely something I've seen somewhere before as well.
Yeah, well, they did that before the Karada Kyokai movies as well because they had, like, the little claymation Ryogi Shiki and the rest of the characters, and one of them, some guy lights a cigarette, and Shiki just turns around and slices the cigarette into pieces and just glares at the guy.
It's just brilliant. I love the little extra stuff of that. I mean, to be honest, for a standalone movie, Anime Limited have actually done a really good job in putting a lot of nice extras in. I mean, there's a booklet and there's hero cards and all sorts in there. So it's like, yeah, if you like a lot of little extra cool things with your rare film, it's definitely worth looking at.
It's funny you mentioned the hero cards, because Realm of the Damned has like a little character booklet and some character cards in there as well.
Yeah, that's what was cool.
Just along the Tiger and Bunny, it's definitely not going to be the last I've seen of it. I believe it was back in August last year, Ron Howard turned around and said that they've actually got a screenwriter for a live-action adaptation of the
Announced a live-action film of it probably about 3 or 4 years ago now. It's fingers crossed it'll look good. That actually is another thing that is Japan-only, which is called Tiger and Bunny the Live, which is a live stage show of Tiger and Bunny, which part of it was actually put in the beginning DVD. That's something that they kind of released on DVD, and I was kind of trying to get an answer off Jeremy last year about if they would bring that over, but they kind of just, like, didn't realise it existed.
Yeah.
So, it's something else worth looking out for, but, yeah, more Tiger and Bunny, please. There's plenty of stuff for a season 2.
Okay, well, I think that's us done for the day, isn't it?
Yeah.
Before we go, Keyframe is part of the Geek Show Podcast Network, and if you like what we do, because we like what we do, show your support, buy one of our lovely bits of merchandise from our shop, which is on thegeekshow.co.uk. All of our shows are available on Audioboom and iTunes and on YouTube, so you can find us through your smartphone, on your computer. We are all over the place on the internet. And, yeah, if you want to get in touch with us, you can find us on Facebook, on Twitter, on Google+, on MyAnimeList, or just email us, studio@thegeekshow.co.uk. And if you are a huge animation fan, then subscribe to our show.
Yes, do it.
So Tucky had Rock Lee and his ninja acquaintances.
Disappointments.
Not Rock Lee and his ninja dog food, Rock Lee and his ninja acquaintances. I had Realm of the Damned, and Mark had Tiger and Bunny the Rising.
Yeah.
We're going to leave you with those tasty treats, and we're going to disappear off into the wilderness, where we can just run away from the screams of Tucky as he's being beaten up by Donna.
I've got now to come back with.
And we will see everybody on the next exciting episode of Keyframe. Until then, I have been Rob.
I have been Mark.
I have been Lewis.
And I've been Tucky.
We'll see you all next week.
Goodbye.
Bye.